This is A Wee Bit of Everything, the podcast that explores all things sport and teaching.
Welcome back to a brand new series of the Obo Podcast. In this series, we interview Olympic and Paralympic athletes as we dive into their PE experiences and career highlights.
This series is in partnership with SAT-PE, and we're looking forward to collaborating together to provide the very best professional learning platform for PE teachers in Scotland. Be sure to get signed up to SAT-PE on their website to keep up to date with the latest developments in physical education. Let's get started with this week's episode of A Wee Bit of Everything.
Hello and welcome back to this week's episode of the A Wee Bit of Everything podcast with your hosts, Lewis and Clark. This week we're back to our athlete series. So this is the third episode of our athlete series where we welcome on Martin Perry. Martin's a professional Scottish para table tennis player, European team player and British champion in 2019. Martin is also a motivational speaker delivering presentations on overcoming adversity, resilience and harnessing problem solving skills. In May 21, he announced his biggest ever brand partnership with Kangen Team UK, the alkaline water filtration machine specialists. To give you a wee kind of insight into Martin's condition, he was born with a condition known as congenital limb loss and deformity, resulting in him being born with no hands and and only one leg. So growing up with three older brothers, Martin wasn't allowed to feel sorry for himself as they made sure he was included in everything, including sport. Martin played many sports through his childhood growing up, including football, rugby, basketball and athletics, until he found his passion, which is table tennis. So we'll hear a lot more about that in today's episode and we'll touch a bit on his PE experiences. So I'll pass you over to Mr. Burrow, who will give us a wee insight into some of the questions as per.
Yeah, as Lewis said, this is the third episode. We'll talk a bit about his career achievements and then we'll talk a wee bit more about his experiences in PE as a pupil and the school that he was part of and the department in which he experienced as a pupil. So it'll be interesting to get his thoughts on how he's able to access PE. And then also talking about his sporting achievements and what life skills were required during his athletic experience with table tennis. And then finally, we'll talk a wee bit about how PE was made inclusive and what value PE has in his opinion to contribute to a child's attainment and well-being as part of the school day. So then Lewis will finish off with a quick fire round, which is always good fun. So that'll be us for tonight. Enjoy. Welcome to the Wee Bit of Riveting podcast. Martin, how's things been?
Pretty uneventful today, actually. I've done nothing but tidy up the flat. So my training partner has bailed on me. He's called in sick. So after this, I'm going to go to the gym, get a workout in. But at least my wife will be happy coming home to the flat being nice and tidy. So, you know, there's some positives, but at least I never spent my day playing the PlayStation, which I was very tempted to do.
Sounds like you've been productive, which is all you can ask.
But that's the thing, like, so obviously I was meant to be training today and I do naturally have a lot of energy, you know, being a professional athlete, you're used to running around all day. So, I mean, I'm not saying I'm an absolute whiz when it comes to cleaning the flat, but I know it's tidied within an inch of its life. Could maybe use a wipe down, no, but it's definitely tidy.
Tidy, maybe not the cleanest, but tidy.
Aye. Which apparently my wife tells me is two different things.
That's why we get a cleaner on just to sort
that out. I recently found that out as well, the hard way. So
you were saying, Lewis, you like to do the housework though, because it makes you productive with your work. But housework first.
I suppose you're right.
What's your favourite bit?
The hoovering.
Still hoovering?
Hoovering all day long.
Good stuff. Right, we'll move on. Thanks very much for joining us tonight, Martin, to share your experience in PE as a pupil and also, obviously, Paralympic GB athlete as well. So we'll talk a wee bit about your stories that are involved with that, which is very inspiring. So before we get into that, could you give us and the listeners a wee bit of background information on your career to date?
World Wind Tour would be, I started playing table tennis at, I think, 17 when I was still attending Glenifer High School in Paisley. I went on to represent Scotland at the Hungarian Open not long after that, before being called up to the British squad. I ended up going full-time as a professional in 2017, about, you know, 4 years after playing, and since then I've gone on to win over 55 international medals, highlights of them being the US Open, two-time European team champion, and most recently I got a bronze medal at the Singles World Championships in November, and my world ranking at the moment is 10 in the world. So that's a kind of whirlwind tour of who I am and where I've been.
So just talk us through that experience when that medal goes round your neck. What's it like?
It was incredible. Like, obviously, like, not blowing my own trumpet, I've won a lot of medals. But when you win a major medal, it's special. It's really,
oh, it must be.
You know, I was very fortunate to be there. I missed out on automatic qualification by like one spot, maybe two spots. So I was really, really close. I was on the cusp of qualifying and I missed out. So in the summer leading up to it, I was absolutely heartbroken. Like, as an athlete, you want to be at these major events, you know, European Championships, World Championships, Paralympic Games, and to not be there was absolutely gutting. I was awarded, thankfully, a wild card in order to compete. You know, so whoever looked at my application that day, thank you very much. They awarded me a wild card, and it all fell together really, really nicely. I managed to win a bronze medal. So for someone that in their own eyes, you know, shouldn't even have been there, you know, I didn't qualify. So that's the way I saw it. I was like, well, I don't deserve this. So I went into the competition with no pressure on myself, because I was like, you've got a free crack at it here. And to be on the podium with like number 1, 2, and 4 in the world. And then there was me sitting at like 15 at the time or something. I was like, incredible. Like,
that's mad.
But yeah, just to be up there, it was just truly amazing. It was just such a surreal experience, because it had been such a whirlwind of emotions, you know, that last sort of like 3 months building up to it, thinking you're not going to go. Then I literally got a call one night at training, being like, you're in. Well, actually, the director that phoned me, he was like, oh, you're not in. So I instantly was like, oh, right, that's my season done then. And I was like, oh, wow, right, thank you for letting me know. And then he was like, he flipped it on his head. He was like, nah, I'm only kidding, by the way you're going. And I was like, you cannot do that. Like, I was really, so not many folk get to like shout and swear down the phone to their performance director, but that's what I was doing that night.
I'm sure you're entitled to do it.
So, exactly.
Yeah, but you know, obviously I was just completely over the moon when I managed to win the medal. And if you check my social media channels, there's a video out there of like me celebrating when I win the bronze medal, and you can like, you see how much it means to me. And it was just one of those moments, and I hate saying it because it's so cliche, but it just happened in slow motion. Do you know what I mean? When I won that final point, and I remember like screaming so loud when I won, that like genuinely my legs just like turned to jelly, and I nearly fell over. Like, I lost my balance. At least it felt like that anyway. Like, if you watch the video, I look quite stable, but in my head I was like, oh my goodness, I'm gonna topple over here, just because I was just like so full of emotion, as had been on that roller coaster, going from you're not going to, okay, we'll apply for a wild card, and then being like, oh, you're definitely not going, only kidding, you're in. And then actually being there
and competing
and competing and winning that medal. I was just like, brilliant. That 3 month build up had just been all over the place, and you know, it put me in a great position now going forward to hopefully try and qualify for Paris 2024. But
brilliant.
So Dana, so see off the back of that, so say you got your bronze medal, so that doesn't guarantee you a place for next year. You still need to go through like a qualifier and stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. So the only way that you can guarantee a spot at the Paralympic Games is to win the previous major championship, which wasn't the World Championships. We're going to have a European Championships later on in this year, and whoever wins that gets a guaranteed spot. So, you know, even if I'd said I'd won the World Championships, that wouldn't have guaranteed me a place at Paris. So the qualification for me starts in 3 weeks' time out in Italy. There's some guys out in Giza at the moment in Egypt competing. They've kicked off their season 3 weeks earlier than us. Some of the guys from, like, France and things, they're out there. But GB, we took a stance on we'll start in Italy, gives us 3 weeks more to prepare. So yeah, and from there, you know, we just need to obviously try and be as high in the world ranking as we possibly can be to guarantee that spot, because the criteria still hasn't been released. So we
Right.
don't know, like we don't know the level we have to meet. But I'm hoping, obviously, being at 10 in the world at the moment, I should be fairly close to qualifying. I should be there or thereabouts. So, you know, fingers crossed that I have a good performance in Italy and then go on and you know, finish the remainder of the season strong. I should be in a really good position. But then obviously, as I said earlier, there's that golden ticket of if you go and win the European Championships, then you're in. So you know, it's just a matter of time of waiting to see when this criteria gets released, and then we'll know sort of what ranking I need to be and go from there, really.
What's bigger in terms of like your sport then? Is it the World Championships or the Paralympics? What would you rather, like, what's like any more?
Well, put it this way, no one's ever going to remember me for going to the World Championships.
Aye, so
They will
aye.
for being a Paralympian. You know, that's
But even in the field of table tennis though, like what's a
the
more kind of
Paralympics for sure. That's the
is it
pinnacle.
aye? Right,
It's the
okay.
absolute pinnacle for
That's
us.
the word I was looking for.
Yeah, no, it really, really is. And don't get me wrong, like I'm immensely proud of having a bronze medal at the World Championships. To get to the Paralympic Games
It's just a
is
bigger event, isn't it, with
it
number of, I
is,
suppose.
you know, and to be in there with the best of the best. I would argue, there's an argument for the World Championships being harder to win and to medal at, just simply because of the playing structure. Maybe not this year. Well, this year just gone, with it being straight knockout for the first time. However, the strength and depth tends to be a little bit stronger at the World Championships. So some people deem it a little bit harder to win and to medal at. However, I would still say for me, the pinnacle is being a Paralympian. And hopefully next year I can say I'm a Paralympian. You know, it's a title that is certainly earned. And, you know, a lot of my teammates have got that title and they've got those Paralympic medals. But it's a title that I'm still waiting for. And, you know, hopefully this year and this summer in particular, I can go out and earn that qualification spot so that come 18 months' time, I can call myself a Paralympian and say that I've competed at the biggest stage of them all. When you know, I've proven to myself that when you're at these big events, anything can happen. So, you know, but there's a job to be done. I need to get there first.
Martin, was it how many medals was it you said earlier? Was it fifth?
I don't know off the top of my head. I know I've surpassed 55 international
55.
medals.
So, like, what's it like when you get that? Like, assuming you get given the medal, like, how do you then? Obviously, you're on a high. What's it like trying to get back to? What's it like dealing with that high after an event or winning something? Is it quite tricky to get back to training to motivate yourself? What's it like to try to get back to it?
As I said, obviously, it depends on where you win that medal. You know, for example, like the World Championships. I only played a handful of matches. I've played sort of somewhat, for want of a better phrase, lower level tournaments. I've played, you know, like 10, 15 matches or whatever, and I'm absolutely knackered. I played a very small handful of matches at the World Championships, and I've never been more physically, emotionally, and mentally drained from that. So I think I took like 2 weeks off after the World Championships just to actually relax because I was just so like mentally drained. But when you're going through like the pro tours, sort of like so when I kick off Italy in 3 weeks' time, in the next 7 weeks from then, I've got three pro tours. So like you just need to keep going. Like you need to go again, go again, go again. And that's where the results are good or bad. You know, say I come home with a couple of medals from Italy. I'm playing singles and doubles. Say I come home with two medals from that. It doesn't matter. I've got Greece like in a few weeks' time. Say I come home with no medals there. It doesn't matter because I've got Slovenia in a couple of weeks' time after it. You know what I mean? So it's obviously you're immensely proud to get a medal for yourself and for your country, but it's a job. It's not as if it's
Aye.
a hobby or a vacation where I can just be like, oh, that was nice. I'll hang that up somewhere. It's literally like, right, you've done
Back
your
to
job.
work.
You've done your job. Get back to work and do it again.
Schedule seems pretty hectic.
It goes through phases, you know, it's peaks and troughs. So like obviously the next 3, 4 months for me are pretty full on. You know, obviously, as I said, it kicks off in Italy. But between that, I've got British League, I'm playing a competition in Jersey. You know, I've got three internationals in that time. So the next sort of 3-4 months are pretty hectic, and then it will die down quite a bit. We'll get a couple of weeks off in the beginning of summer. So we'll get like 2 weeks off in June, and then it's all gung-ho again to build up to the European Championships.
Yeah.
And then after that, it's more a case of, right, where are we sitting in the world ranking? Do we need to go to more tournaments? Can we afford to rest a little bit and focus on more of a training regime? But obviously at the moment, it's very much get competition ready. So in terms of a training environment, it's a lot of serve receive, a lot of itty bitty points to try and replicate match play. There's no point training too much on big consistent rallies because we're going into a match play part of the season now where it is just bang, 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 match after match. And it might be great feeling that I can put 100 balls on the table, but you know, if you look at the percentages of table tennis, it's one within the first three shots. So a lot of my training now is geared around service and receive and how can I win those points early. So, you know, you go through phases of being super, super busy, and then you go through phases where you can relax a little bit more and really focus your training schedule on how to improve.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And just before we move on to the next question, Martin, I've got in the introduction, I spoke a wee bit about how you do kind of motivational speaking as well. Is that kind of something that you focus on in your off season, or?
I focus on it obviously a lot more in the off season, but if the opportunity arises and it doesn't impact my training, then I look to do it, you know, as often as possible. It's something that I really enjoy doing, mm-hmm. you know, and being told, especially post event, that you've really helped to inspire and motivate, whether it's an individual or a team of co-workers or whoever it may be. You know, that's a really nice feeling knowing that you've hopefully helped yeah. someone in some way. But it's something that I'd like to do more of. You know, I do enjoy going to events and speaking to people and helping people because as selfish as it is, helping people is always a nice feeling for yourself.
Yeah, for sure.
Also, I feel like it's a really good way to grow personally because as an athlete, it's very easy to get stuck in that rut of going to training, going to competition, and your view of the world can be a little bit skewed. Mm-hmm. Whereas, you know, having the opportunity to go into corporate clients and go into businesses that, you know, that are a vast array of different industries, it just gives me such a broad perspective on life, and it gives me ideas, obviously, about where I would maybe potentially see myself post table tennis career.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's obviously a privilege in itself, whereas some athletes get to the end of their career and go, right, what now? What do I do? Mm-hmm. You know, so I get a lot of experience going into these industries and just basically seeing like this is maybe what I want to do. But I'd like to keep up the talks as much as possible.
Aye, brilliant. I can imagine it'd be very inspirational. I think it'd be. Have you ever done schools and stuff like that as well, or is it just?
No, I've done schools. I've done schools and I've done charities and things like that as well. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, like all of us, I've got bills to pay.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
And these big corporations can just afford more of a budget that allows me to obviously.
Of course.
Because at the end of the day, for me to do any sort of speaking engagement or any engagement that isn't me training or competing, I'm then in turn sacrificing a training opportunity or
yeah, of course.
A competing opportunity. And I've got to weigh that up in terms of pros and cons, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. So
it's just, you've got to do what's right for you, but ultimately, yep. like, especially at this moment in my career, my table tennis will come first.
Mm-hmm.
So I've had to turn down, obviously, speaking engagements, but it's just one of those things that, you know, you always try and keep in the loop with the people that you have turned down. Just, you know, yeah. make sure you give them a nudge, say, look, I've got time here, can you fit me in? Or, you know, can you keep me in mind for future events? But ultimately, mm-hmm. I need to focus on my table tennis.
Yeah, absolutely. I prioritise. It's interesting because Clark and I, we were into kind of like a long distance running, and we were set out to do a kind of crazy distance running challenge, and we were right on it with like, oh, we wanted to set up like this business to do motivational speaking, and we had big massive expectations for it, but the challenge kind of fell flat on its face, so that never really materialised. So. Maybe
we managed one day. We're trying to do like the three peaks in the UK.
Oh yeah.
So we're trying to like run between them. So we've done a lot of ultra running. So we're trying to like do the went to Snowdon, climbed Snowdon, came down, then tried to jog to Liverpool. So we done the first day to just before Liverpool, so we done 55 mile. But then it was working at an average of 60 mile a day in a week. Yeah. So we called it three peaks, two men, 1 week. So we're trying to do it in a week because it sounded good and it just was so unrealistic.
But yeah, that does sound pretty tough, isn't it? I mean, if you ever need any volunteers in the future, please do not ask me.
I wondered where you were going with that one.
I know.
Right, okay, so moving on to next question then. So if you've got a kind of reminiscing about your PE experiences then, so you can give us one of each year. So what were your favourite and or least enjoyable moments when in PE as a pupil? Can you think of any that stick out off the top of your head?
Least favourite would probably be any day they chucked us outside in the rain and played football for a double period, which sounds great because you get to play football for a double period, but I just hate being in the rain. Like, it's probably one of the reasons I picked table tennis as a career. Mm. Like, I get to be inside all day. So I hated that, or even worse was when it was in winter and we all know how cold it gets as a Scottish winter. So yeah, hated any day that involved that. Positive experience would be pretty much every other day in PE. You know, I was really allowed to go and literally, you know, just chuck myself head first at any sport that we engaged in PE. And that ranges from basketball, obviously I mentioned football, hockey, found myself as the goalie because I was pretty useless otherwise trying to hold a hockey stick. So I just chucked myself in goals and like dive in front of a hockey ball. Looking back on it, probably not a wise decision.
Did you get all the pads on that one?
Yeah, but aye. Still, like, that
hurts. I know, that it hurts. It does.
I played rugby a couple of times for Glenifer. I played basketball for Glenifer. You know, we had gymnastics and things. So the school was not short of sporting facilities or equipment. So I got to try absolutely everything and anything. You know, and the PE department for me at Glenifer was just very open-minded and very much under the sort of mindset of like, just go and see what happens. If you hurt yourself, then just maybe keep it quiet. You know,
did you like that approach? I take it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, right. Like, because my entire life, like, my family have been under the same approach. Like, they never wrapped me up in cotton wool or anything like that. So when I went to high school, they were like, go and give it a crack, and you know, we'll work something out. If you can't do it, then we'll adapt it. But until that happens, just go and give it a go. So I really enjoyed that, you know. And as I said, like, I ended up playing in the basketball team. Like, it was mainstream at Warwick School. Played in the rugby team a couple of times. And I think that just happens because I was actually there, able to play sport, and not you know, mollycoddled or wrapped up in any way. So they just allowed me to go and develop, and that did wonders, obviously, for my confidence. You know, as a young, overweight at the time teenager with a very severe physical impairment, it would have been quite easy for me to sort of go into a shell. But the fact that I was able to throw myself around and do everything that my peers were doing, then, you know, that did wonders for me. You know, I remember one guy having a go at me once. About being in the basketball team. He's like, you only get picked because you've got no hands. And the teacher overheard it. And he was like, he got picked because he can shoot better than you. Like, that's why, you know what I mean? Blunt. Like, so just having that freedom in PE for me was fantastic. And it was why I picked it as a subject.
Yeah.
Moving forward, you know, and even in sixth year, I declined three periods because you could pick leisure PE at Glenifer. So you, instead of doing your, like, study periods, you could pick a leisure period as well. And for me, it'd be PE. So there was some days, four out of my six classes would be PE classes. It was brilliant.
Brilliant. So how did PE impact you then beyond, like, your sport achievements with table tennis? Like, did it help you build those life skills, like determination and confidence and resilience, I guess? Did it help you with that?
Yeah, I mean, I've never obviously thought about it too much, but I guess it did, you know, because it allowed me to be very confident within myself as a young man, you know, knowing that I could do everything that my friends were doing. But also, it was through PE at Glenifer that I found table tennis. I was playing rugby for the school in a local sevens tournament, and like it was, I think it was like the Renfrewshire Cup or something. So all the high schools in Renfrewshire competed, and we ended up winning it. And sort of we ended up in the local paper, and someone from Scottish Disability Sport, they saw the local paper, and obviously, as you know, my disability is incredibly visual. I got no hands and one leg. They clocked that straight away. But we'd been there and won the Renfrewshire Sevens Cup. So they contacted the school and the PE department and said, look, you've got a guy playing mainstream rugby. He's obviously severely disabled. Like, what else can he do? And as far as I'm aware, Mr. Mingus, who was the head of PE at the time, was just like, come and see him, like, and he'll show you what he can do. So Scottish Disability Sport came to the school, and the intern invited me to a summer camp to basically find, obviously I was never going to make it as a rugby player, but basically to find a sport for me or a pathway that I could then be placed on and hopefully one day represent Scotland or Great Britain and make the Paralympic Games. So I went to the summer camp. There was loads of sports on offer, and one of them was table tennis. Mm-hmm. And sort of long story short, it just snowballed from there. So if I hadn't been encouraged to play sport in Glenifer, I wouldn't have played for the rugby team. I wouldn't have been spotted by a member of Scottish Disability Sport in the local paper, and I might never have played table tennis. So
it just show you how privileged
school has changed my life.
I know, that's just inspiring to hear from our point of view, because it shows you how privileged a position, I suppose, we're in as PE teachers, and you just don't know the impact that your interactions are having in terms of the doors that could be opening.
Yeah, exactly.
I think it's interesting what you say as well, how it was just like you got that opportunity that day with table tennis. Did you feel like it just like clicked and you just kind of got a bug for playing table tennis, or?
Oh, absolutely not. I was dreadful.
Did you not enjoy it the first time you played it, or what? How did it materialise?
I enjoyed it, but I think growing up with my three older brothers, I'm incredibly competitive. So the fact that I was obviously losing just really, really bugged me. But what I did enjoy was just the sport in itself. Like, it was fun, it was fast paced.
Satisfying when you get a good rally as well in table tennis.
Exactly,
isn't it?
It's so accessible. Like, everyone can play table tennis. Like, I literally played with like essentially like a tea towel wrapped around my forearm, and then we put the bat inside the tea towel so it made like a little sleeve, and then we velcroed it on in place. Like, it was so primitive and basic, but it meant I could play with one arm. Yeah. And then I just loved it. Like, I just thought it was great fun. It wasn't like that day I thought, oh, I'm going to be a professional table tennis player. Mm. I was like, I'm just going to play maybe once a week for a laugh and see what happens. Just gives me something to do at night, do you know what I mean? Other than doing my homework, which I should have been doing. Mm-hmm. So that's basically what kicked it off. Like, I was just like, it was fun. But I was beyond dreadful. I just really, really enjoyed it. And then, as I said, it just snowballed. It slowly started taking over like a lot more of my time. And then I was like, maybe I could try and do something with this. And then it just sort of like, you never know when these moments happen. Just all of a sudden, I was a full-time table tennis player. And then a few years later, I was like getting paid for it, and that was the dream. And now I get to travel all over the world and, you know, chasing a little white ball around. Like, that's fantastic.
That's quality. A job. Mm-hmm. Aye, brilliant. So in between obviously your table tennis and your motivational speaking, is that like full time? Is that all your commitments? What you do?
Yeah, that's what I do.
Traveling about. It's
travel involves a lot of travel, but yeah, table tennis.
Do you enjoy that side of it, the traveling over the world, or does it sometimes get quite like tiring?
I enjoy seeing new places. We don't spend much time in them. It's very much get in, do your job, get out. If we go long haul or like ultra long haul, we've been to like Japan and China and stuff, you get a couple of days either side just to adjust to it, because you need to. So when you go further afield, it's a little bit more enjoyable, because you can sometimes get like a little excursion and go and see places. But usually it's very much get in, get out. But even that, it's still nice to say that, you know, I've been to all these countries because I think growing up, I never envisioned travel being part of my life, just due to like my upbringing and family experience and things like that. I never saw me traveling the world. So I think I think I've been to like 35 countries, maybe, give or take, which is amazing. Like, as I said, like growing up, I would never have thought of that.
So how was it in COVID time then, like in terms of traveling? What was that like? Like in terms of training and competition?
I made everyone in my life extremely jealous because after about 2 months, we basically got exemption from the government because we were full-time professional athletes. So we were allowed to go and train. And that meant I could travel up and down the UK if, you know, it was deemed necessary for me to have a training schedule that encompassed that. What we did was we managed to get out of the country like 3-4 times during COVID and go on international training camps. So it was like I was the bane of everyone because they were just like, oh, I'm stuck in the house in Europe on a plane somewhere. And I was like, sorry, it's just a perk of the job. You know, so it was good in that sense that we were still able to travel. But it was a nightmare traveling during COVID, like absolute nightmare. But as I said, usually it's very much get in, get out, but you still get to experience a bit of the local culture. A lot of times you'll go and sample the local beer and things like that on the last night, which is good. But I say to people, obviously I get to travel for a living, but it's not like I'm sitting there taking selfies with the fancy monuments. It's very much get in, get out.
Mm-hmm. Just happens to be that's where the tournaments are.
Yeah, like we can't control that, you know. But it's certainly a perk of the job. I remember when I won the US Open, it was in Las Vegas. So you can imagine what happened after I won the US Open. Like, it was brilliant, do you know what I mean? Like just being there. So like that was pretty awesome.
What a place to win it.
What did you go up the strip?
So we actually stayed on the strip. Like in Vegas, I don't know if you've been, there's like nowhere else to stay. Like the strip is Las Vegas. Right, you know, Nevada's a big place, but when you say Las Vegas, it's just like a mile long on the strip and that's it.
And the desert.
Yeah, everything else outside of that is just like people's homes.
Right, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah, so we had to stay on the strip. It was amazing. It was so cool.
It's a place I'd love to go to visit and just to experience it. It'd be cool.
Yeah, it's unlike anywhere else in the world because you walk up and down the strip and they've got monuments from all over the world. Mm-hmm. Obviously, they've cut them down in size, but it's strange. It's a weird, very gimmicky place, but that's another conversation.
Aye, brilliant. So still kind of staying on the topic of PE, it's great to hear, obviously, your experiences, favourite, least enjoyable, and then some of the life skills and that you feel it's helped you build, and how you actually came into kind of contact with table tennis. But this next one's kind of like a two-part question. So it's looking at how your PE teachers made PE inclusive for you, given your disability. So could you maybe think of, like, I don't know how you could structure it, maybe give us like a couple of sports and ways that they maybe adapted it to make it inclusive for you. And right, if you go with that first, then I'll give you the second bit.
Sure. Straight off the top of my head, you know, one of the sports that was part of the curriculum for us was badminton. Mm-hmm. So obviously that posed an issue. But thankfully when badminton was part of the curriculum, I had already had my experience in table tennis. So we, again, literally just like strapped a badminton racket to my arm with Velcro. Like, I wish it was fancy and high tech, but it wasn't. It wasn't
even designed specifically for that. You just came up with a is it almost
we're like, do you want to play? Yes, right, let's find a way. And that way was, you know, using Velcro and strapping it to my arm. And then I guess, again, it just goes back to that sort of question earlier where they just allowed me to play, like just go for it, like go and see what happens, and then we'll adapt it if need be. But off the top of my head, it was just badminton that we had to adapt. As I said, when it came to hockey, like we pretty much just were like, right, well, holding a stick, it's just not gonna work. So just, do you want to play? Yeah, cool. Do you fancy going in goals? All right then. It never bothered me. I never took the hump with it and was like, oh, they're putting me in goals. I was like, safe sitting in the classroom and everyone else is outside, you know what I mean? Mm. So that was kind of, hockey was probably the most difficult one, but sorry for any hockey listeners, I never really enjoyed it anyway. I wasn't gagging to play, do you know what I mean? So that makes part of the curriculum.
Makes two of us.
Three.
One of my former teachers is going to hate that because actually two of them, Mr. Mingus and Mr. Bleach, both played hockey to a really good standard. So,
just a sport. I think it's one of the ones, if you've not played as a like growing up, or like it's quite hard to kind of get into. It's a difficult sport to pick up. Like, even
I don't know, similar to football as well, but
it's in terms of the skill set though, like the kind of technical skills required to play it, it's like a lot of patience, resilience to actually pick it up and get good at it. Because the standard of the games is never, it's never brilliant, is it? Like, when you're, even when you do like 3v3 or 2v2 small sided games, it's still really hard for them. It's so fast paced and hard to control the ball. Well, I play indoor hockey at my school because we don't have an Astro, so you can imagine what it's like in a game's all floor. It's sometimes having to use puck, like wee plastic pucks instead of balls, because it's just that hard to control it.
Mm. It's also the safety element as well with a class.
Where, yeah, exactly.
You know, you might have a few tricky customers, then it can be a bit, you know, you're letting them loose with hockey sticks, so yeah.
Very politically put there as well.
I was watching every word there.
Carefully worded. Well done, Clark. Thanks for sharing that example with badminton. That's that was a good example there. For the second part of the question, then, what advice would you have for current PE teachers to achieve like a kind of inclusive ethos in their class? Say they had a Martin Perry in their class.
I mean, if they had a Martin Perry in their class, I first and foremost feel sorry for them. I was one of those tricky customers at times. But yeah, I think just, you know what, like, if someone is disabled or needs some sort of adaptation or whatever, the best thing you can do is just like chat to them, like one-on-one, have a conversation, like what do you need, or do you need anything? Do you want anything? Because as I said, like, it's not as if you need to go and look at the budgets and be like, oh, we need to buy some sort of fancy equipment. Like, literally a £5 piece of Velcro enabled me to play badminton. And meant that I could keep up with the rest of my class. You know, it's thinking outside the box. Mm-hmm. And if you've got someone in your class that wants to play, that wants to be a part of it, they'll probably find a way themselves. Yeah. As you guys will know, some students will need more of a nudge than others. And that's obviously whether they're disabled or not, or have an impairment. You know, they might naturally need a nudge, just that someone that's able-bodied will need a nudge, as I'm sure you guys have come across, to get them involved. But it is just making sure, you know, go in with an open mind. There's very few sports, if any, that I can think of that can't be adapted, that mm-hmm. can't be made so that everyone can play. You know, going back to what you said about hockey, the standard doesn't have to be incredibly high, but what we all see the value in is the value of playing sport, you know, the difference that it can make on your life mentally as well as physically. And that doesn't mean that everyone has to go on and be an athlete, but if you can play sport to any sort of degree, you know, the change that can have on your life, it builds good habits, you know, it increases your mental health, and also just being included in that environment. You know, I think it can be very daunting for disabled young people to get involved in sport, especially at school, when, you know, obviously the more severe the impairment, they look around the class going, oh, I can't do what they're doing. Well, you can, we just need to find a way for that to be unlocked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it as well, like, as PE teachers, as you're saying, it's, even if they're just playing sport recreationally, even at night, that's something that they can look forward to, you know, at nights when they've left school, and it gives them a chance to connect socially. Absolutely. As well. Yeah. I remember reading as well that, I think it was on Twitter, was a quote, like, there's only disability in life's a bad attitude. I think you'd probably like that one as well, Martin.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, there is some very severe impairments out there. But, you know, for someone that is willing to do it, whether they may think they're able to or not, you know, the mindset is obviously a massive barrier. But that cuts across all of life. You know, it's not just being disabled. It's not just talking about sport. It's you've got to have the right mindset to take on any challenge. Mm-hmm. You know? And it's just obviously being physically impaired the way I am and looking at sport in a different light, it's something that I never thought would be a career for me, would be sport. You know, I certainly didn't think that growing up, but I have a natural determination and a natural want to win, and I'm super competitive, and those three things just naturally lend themselves to sport.
Yeah, absolutely. Just finally then, for the main part of the episode before the quickfire round, the last question is just your kind of final thoughts on, you know, what value you think PE has in terms of contributing to a child's attainment across the school, and obviously their wellbeing. You touched on mental health. Just your kind of final thoughts on the value of PE, in your opinion.
I think in this country, it can almost be undervalued, the benefits of PE. You know, obviously there's a lot of onus on your very much so-called academical subjects. You know, I remember being absolutely distraught when I picked PE as a subject, finding out that I had to write essays. You know what I mean? But in terms of a physical and mental point of view, you know, the benefits are there massively. You know, as I said earlier, me being allowed to play and compete with my peers when I was obviously a young teenager, you know, obviously going through puberty, emotions are high as it is. I've got a severe disability on top of that. I was quite a few kilos overweight at the time, but being in that games hall and being like, you know what, just go for it. Just give it a shot. That made me feel like an eco, you know, and also it instills good habits. You know, it's getting involved in something, putting yourself into that uncomfortable zone that no one quite likes to be in, because every teenager, or most anyway, in my experience, everyone's a bit self-conscious. No one really wants to run around and get sweaty in PE, but actually, like, just being able to put yourself in that uncomfortable zone, it would do you massive strides forward in life in general. Doesn't have to be sport, as I said earlier, you know, but it's being able to be in a position where you are uncomfortable, because that's how we're going to grow as people. And then going back to the mental health side of it, you know, as I said earlier, there would be some days in my timetable where I'd have like 4 out of 6 periods would be PE, because I picked it as a subject and a leisure subject. And I'd go home and I'd be like, oh, what a day at school. That was amazing. And it was just because you get to run around all day. You know, you get energy to burn at that age.
Yeah.
And I don't think we utilise PE enough in school.
Yeah, so I've been speaking about it on the podcast the last few episodes about, you know, trying to have daily PE and the value that would bring, because kids kind of value what they get every day. And I think it was actually in the 1970s I was speaking to someone. It was the Limbed project in Paisley, where they rolled it out in that area, and they got PE every day, but it got scrapped with funding, I think.
Budgets is always the killer. It's always the killer. And as I said earlier, because sometimes PE is not seen as the most academical subject, it's one of the first to get cut. But, you know, there's so many studies out there that actually show that funding in PE boosts academia in other aspects.
Aye, it had a positive impact on literacy and numeracy, for sure. Yeah. I know it seems to be like health and wellbeing is last on the agenda, which is disappointing, but I suppose that's our job to change that. So, finally, we've got the quickfire round, which Lewis, given it's been 106 episodes, still absolutely raves about it, so
because we always get different answers every time. Right, it doesn't necessarily need to, well, the first question doesn't need to link to anything, it can be something random at all. The next two are kind of relevant to the episode. So number one, quickfire question, just off the top of the head, quickfire answer, first thing that comes to your head, alright? If you could have a giant billboard anywhere, what would it say on it?
Give it a go. I don't know. That's awful.
That's fine.
No, it's good. Good. Love it. Two, which people or books have had the biggest influence on your life?
Two people or books?
Which people or books?
Oh, which people or books? I'll unblur my background and see if you can tell me from there. I don't know if you can see from there.
A few books up there.
Yeah, there's 7 of them and they're in order, if that's a clue.
Harry Potter.
Loved it. I've even got like sleeve tattoo of Harry Potter.
I'm proud of myself that I managed to see that for you.
No judgment.
I was looking for the Goblet of Fire. That's the fat book, isn't it? But
that's the fat one, yeah. That's the big one. That was the first one I read. Yeah, definitely the Harry Potter books. I've been loving playing Hogwarts Legacy recently as well. So yeah.
Okay. Brilliant. What one piece of advice would you give to a teacher looking to improve their PE lessons? Maybe to think about that element of inclusion.
Yeah, so obviously, you know, where possible, make it inclusive for all, but ultimately make it fun. You know, so many kids get put off sport because they don't like the rules and the regimen of it. So because it's PE, you can get away with breaking those rules, I guess. You know, as you said, it's recreational. Just make it fun for all the kids involved, and that'll just, in my eyes, just make retainment so much higher.
Love that, Martin. Thank you very much for coming on to the podcast tonight to contribute to the third, I think it's the third and final episode of the athlete series. So it was great to chat to you and get your experiences as an athlete and your experiences in PE and that as well. So thanks for your time.
Oh, thank you very much for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, nice to meet you, Martin. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this episode of OBO in partnership with SAT-PE.
We hope you've enjoyed today's discussion and been able to take something away that you can transfer into your teaching or indeed your life.
Until next time, we hope you have a fantastic week. Take good care of yourselves.